Our next speaker tonight is Glenn, and been like a brother in recovery for me. So come on up, Glenn.
I'm Glenn. I'm an alcoholic. And gosh, man, I want to say thank you so much for your honesty and part of your story and sharing that with us tonight and with me. And I remember when you came in and you sat along that wall. And it reminded me because I sat along that wall too. In fact, Ted came and picked me up out of a real stupor. I had called him in the middle of whatever. And it's kind of vague, but I'll tell the story as it goes. And I called him up and I said something like, Ted, he's like, what's up, pal? I haven't heard from you in a long time, because I had been in this program before. And I said, well, I can't stop drinking. And that was the first time I had said that in like 6.5 years, maybe 7 years. And he said, well, where are you? And I said, well, I'm at home. And he goes, I'm going to come over. I'm like, great, come on over. And he came over to the house and he goes, come outside. So I went outside and he goes, get in the car. And I'm like, fuck, where are we going, you know? And you would think that he would take me like someplace to have coffee, maybe talk some sense into me, do a little one-on-one is what I'm thinking, right? I'm like, then maybe this might be an easy dinner, you know? And no, he brings me here at the 1600 Club on a Thursday night. And I sat on that wall, along the wall there, and I remember not much. And I remember seeing some familiar faces. I had looked around the room, and I was going, God, I know this guy's still here? Still sober? Still sober. And I'm like, wow, Suzanne is still here? How much time she got now? 20-some years. I'm like, man, this thing really works. And it started to seep in a little bit about how I had gone down this scale that we talk about. No matter how far down the scale you can go, if you have the capacity to be honest, brutally honest, there's hope. But I'm so stubborn and so persistent on being stubborn that, you know, I don't want that revelation to come true because I'm not done yet. I'm just not. I don't want to feel anything that I've done in the last 6.5 years from my relapse that that I have to feel, you know? And it became very real to me again one more time. And I'm a good barrier. I like to bury stuff, right? I know we can relate to that. I like to, like, do a bunch of things that I don't want to look at and then just kind of, like, know they're there, but I'll just push them way down so I don't have to look at them. And because I had tried this program so many times before, my very first meeting was in 1988 at a Cocaine Anonymous meeting. And I was about 28 years old, and I had a drug problem, and it was killing me. It was killing me. And in that meeting, I found a bunch of people in there that were alcoholics as well. And they started telling me that you better watch out for alcohol because it has a way of manifesting in your life. In other words, it will grow in a whole other area. I wasn't drinking a whole lot because I really couldn't enjoy it because I would drink and just puke. That was no fun. But when I did cocaine, I could stay up and do whatever I needed to do, you know? And through that process, I managed to get a couple of years sober. And I didn't work one step. I did not get a sponsor. I had great intentions. I just wanted to come in and just, you know, be a part of the group because I identified something was going on bigger than me in the group. I could hear stories. I can listen. There were speaker people, you know, people come out and they talk to us. And I would hear the message, but I didn't want to, like, absorb it and utilize it in my life. You know that how we say analyze, don't analyze, utilize? Well, I wasn't done analyzing yet. You know, and I didn't know I was analyzing. I didn't know I was sitting in a room making judgment calls and having contempt prior to investigation, meaning that I would figure it all out before I'd even get started. I didn't know that. I just knew I thought I had a drug problem and in my life, if I could just get rid of that, everything would be okay. And at that time, I had met somebody, a female, and I I look to her to save me. I look to her to save me. And what ended up happening, I ended up ruining a marriage, a whole other life that I don't talk too much about. I'm not proud of it. And it is what it is. But this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, we share our laundry here, but we also share the solution. There's a solution in that. You know, now I can look at that and I can say, okay, what was my part? What happened? Why did I do what I did? And learn from it and move on. And then help somebody else that has a situation in their life that they're going through. That's how we give it away. That's the magic here. We don't have to be rocket science here. You know, it's just one alcoholic talking to another. And you know, through the process of recovery, even though that I didn't stay here, I learned something at those few years. I did. I gathered some information, but I'm a hustler. When I was growing up as a kid, I hustled my way through everything. I panhandled all the time. I ran away from home. I was a runaway. I would steal March of Dimes cans and go collect money and utilize it to my benefit, you know. Not proud of that. But, you know, we grew up in a home that wasn't so organized. I would say it was a little more dysfunctional. And it was kind of feet for fathom. That's what we did. And then when I got a little older, I ended up getting a job and ended up joining the service. And I just continued to run on self-will for so long. You know, I always tried to manage and control my drinking. I always tried to manage and control my life. But there was always some sort of substance abuse in it. Weed, cocaine, alcohol, something. I couldn't live in this skin for too long. I guess start getting a little bit of time, maybe a couple weeks, 3 weeks. I know when I went in the service, the longest stretch I ever had was like 13 weeks that you're in boot camp. I was in the Marine Corps. And by the end of that 13 weeks, I was ready to just go nuts. You know, my crutch wasn't there. My weed was gone. My little tool that I needed to escape. My secret life, right? We all have secret lives when we get here. The book talks about a double life. I'm living a double life because I don't want you to know how screwed up I am. I'm so screwed up, I don't even want to know how screwed up I am. You know? And when I got down to causes and conditions, and when I was in CA Anonymous, all I could do was just look at myself and say, you're messed up. That was my first awakening. When things came up and I couldn't handle them, and we ended up getting divorced in that marriage, and I have an older boy that I don't speak with much, and because of my addiction and alcoholism, and I ended up finding another gal in my life, and was married to her for 23 years. And when we moved up to Santa Maria, I was living in Los Angeles at the time. We moved up here, and I had a couple years of sobriety, and I found this club. There was this club, the only club that was around. It was probably like 1993, or I don't know, it was like 1994, 95, somewhere in that neighborhood. And I walked in here, and I just came from a room down in L.A., that it was non-smoking. Everybody in the room was probably 35 to 45. And, you know, it was good-looking people everywhere. And it was just like, you know, I was in the middle of L.A. and I was trying to find Glenn. And I walked into this room and it was filled with smoke. I mean, there was a no-smoking sign on this section over here. But this section, we had a cloud of smoke because they would blow it over here. And I would sit over here and I would smell this stuff and I'd go home and die. And a lot of you that know my story, I can't take cigarette smoke and vaping and stuff. It just gets me really sick. And I'd go home and I wash my clothes and I wash my face and I come back and try it again. And I'm like, I'm not coming back here. I'm just going to do it on my own. Because, you know, I as long as I stay away from the cocaine, I'm good. My life is going to be okay. I don't have to worry about it. I'll be fine. I never really was much of a drinker. So if I can just take a handle on this, I'm going to be fine. So when I bolted out of here and I ended up finding a job, just doing a little car wash deal. I was in sales. I didn't want to go back to sales. So I was working for the city and I was washing police cars, you know. And I was about 33 years old. Now think about that. I'm 33 years old, I've got a son that's probably a year and a half old, and the best I can put together is washing police cars. What's going on here? Think about that. What? I didn't even see that. That's the best I could do to provide for my family? Because I needed time away because I was so stressed out. You know? The book talks about anxiety and it talks about worry and depression. I have all that. You know? It talks about being self-seeking motives. I have that too. When I'm drinking and when I'm not drinking. You know? Growing up in Santa Maria made it easy to come home. But what happened here is that I couldn't face the fact that I was an alcoholic. And I had alcoholism. And when I talked about the manifestation, how it can grow into a different area, it did with me. I stopped using drugs. It wasn't really wasn't big for me anymore. It just wasn't my thing. And I started picking up drinking. And by 1999, from 94 to 99, I ended up getting a DUI. And the DUI scared the shit out of me. And I had some time in this program before, and I thought, well, I'll just go back to those rooms. Forget it. Do I smell like smoke? I smell like smoke. Because I can't afford to lose my license. If I lose my license, I'm going to lose my job. And at that time, I was selling cars for a living. I was in the auto industry. And I couldn't do that. So, you know, things happened. I was able to get it reduced to wet reckless. And I was able to save my license and keep that job. And I came in here, but I did the same thing. You know, I didn't utilize the steps. I analyzed the steps. I started not really looking at this. I knew I was an alcoholic. I can identify as an alcoholic, but I really didn't want to believe that I had a problem. I didn't want to concede to my innermost self that I had a problem with alcohol. I didn't want to really make that surrender that we talk about here in Alcoholics Anonymous. That gut-leveling surrender that when things get tough, I wasn't going to pick up again. And I rode the wave for a while, and I started, you know, feeling pretty good. Things got okay. You know, I started being a better dad. I started being a better husband at that time. I worked some of the steps. Malcolm was my sponsor. This guy right here in this picture. Well, over here. Big guy with a blue shirt on. And he was a great guy. And you know, and he worked those steps with me. And at that time, I worked next to, Ted was in the car business, and we worked next to each other. And I was starting to form somewhat of a fellowship here, but I didn't dive in. I had my big toe in. That's what I had. You know, you can have a little bit of me. Because I'm so stubborn, I'm being persistent. I am very persistent at being stubborn. You need to really prove to me that I got a problem. Because I'll fight it till the end. You know, and I'm trying to manage my life and I'm working a ton of hours and I'm making money now, making decent money. I'm getting ready to buy my first home and I'm walking through life with my head held high. I think I'm doing okay because I'm not drinking. I'm not using. I'm cleaned up. Life's okay. Right. But what I had was untreated alcoholism. I had untreated alcoholism and I didn't even know that. Even though you guys were talking about it, I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to believe it was a disease. A disease? That sounds like, you know, like something really bad. Right? A disease? I don't want to believe that. That it's incurable, but it's treatable. It's incurable, but it's treatable. They kept saying that. They'd say, they wouldn't come up, what step are you working? I don't want to tell them because I wasn't really working on a step. I was working on Glenn. I'm in here chasing around, doing stupid things, not really sticking to any meetings, you know? And I thought that was the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. But that was the best that I could do at that time. That was all I was willing to give it. I was willing to put a little effort in to get a little bit out. And through the years, as I'm staying sober, and I'm unworking whatever little program I have just as quick as I'm working it. I'm unworking it. I don't really want to go to those meetings anymore. I don't really want to get an honest look at what's going on in my life. I'm watching people grow in Alcoholics Anonymous and I'm staying the same. That's a tough spot to be in. Think about it. You're here for 4 or 5 years, and the people you come in with, they've done 2 or 3, 4 steps. They're sponsoring people, and you're trying to hide. I'm not going to sponsor this guy. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. But I'll come in and I'll talk the game. But I'm unwilling to do the work. It's not easy to admit that stuff. But I know some of you in here idle. I know I still idle. I still have a problem with idling. You know? I'm like the racehorse, you know? I could start out the gate. Man, I'm on it. I'll admit I'm an alcoholic. I'll do all the work. I'll do steps 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. Get a little wind in my cell. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And it's just like this all the time. It gets exhausting. Not wanting to surrender. Not wanting to put myself in a position to learn something. To take direction. It's exhausting. I played every avenue that I could play. Every one. And some. In year six, I stopped coming to meetings. I wasn't coming at all. Wasn't doing any work. Wasn't helping anybody. I wasn't sticking around after the meeting talking to people. I'd show up, taking a quick meeting once a week, and then I'd leave. And at that time, I really believed that my life was getting better because I was being a good dad. I was home on time. I was taking my son to karate. We were doing stuff together. We were hanging out. You know, I'm being a good dad. But I had untreated alcoholism. For the benefit of me looking well in your life, but I'm not taking care of myself. I'm so busy trying to be a good dad and a good husband and this, and I'm losing sight of what's fueling me. And inside, I'm just like growing. It's like a bad weed. It's just growing. The tornado is brewing. It's waiting. I'm not fitting in anywhere. I'm feeling out of place. Everywhere I go, I just don't feel right. Things are unbalanced. I tried to just strap it on church for a while. It was great for a small brief. For a small brief. And I'm not knocking people that go to church. Go to church. Lead the way. Pray for me, please. I need it in my life. I'm not being a smartass when I say that. There are some great people with good examples that go to church. But when you're an alcoholic who has untreated alcoholism, you need this. I need this. I need you people to share your experiences with me so I can grow. And then I need to pass on what I'm learning here so I can keep it. They keep telling me that, but I'm evading like crazy. I'm like, I don't want to do that. Well, it's uncomfortable. You're going to take up all my time. I'm not going to be able to travel. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. It's all about Glenn. It's all about me. I've taken it all back and don't even see that I've taken it all back. By year seven hits, I'm out gambling one night at some casino far away and decide to take off with my brother-in-law. And I ended up drinking again. And I remember sitting there in that bar thinking, I don't have to drink. All I have to do is get honest. If I can make it through this day right here and go back to alcohol, I had the clarity right then. If I could just do this, I'll make it back. I'll be okay. I'll get honest about what's going on in my life. I'll have a clean slate. And man, I'm on my way. Because I know there's a solution here. But down inside, there's this guy that wants to be fed. There's that secret double life guy that needs it. He can't handle and control and enjoy his drinking. He knows that. But inside, I'm going insane. I'm restless. I'm irritable and discontent. And I'm like, screw it. Well, I didn't say screw it. I said, fuck it. And boom, down the hatchet went. And it was on. And it got worse. And I tried to manage it through the weekend only. Then I tried to manage it just 3 days a week. And then I tried to manage it. Now this is going on a year, then 2 years, then 3 years. And I'm drinking and driving again. That I swore off I would never do. Second paragraph in page 24. One of my favorite parts of the book because I relate to this over and over and over. Don't ask me to recite it. I'm not quite, brain cells are not good. So it says, the fact is that most alcoholics, for any reason yet obscured, my colorful imagination, have lost the power of choice to drink. So that means that I really shouldn't even be in that bar, hanging out with those people, gambling. It's just fueling the energy. I've lost that power of choice to drink. So if it's going to fuel me, I'm going to have lack of power. And if lack of power is my dilemma, guess what's going to happen? I'm going to pick up sooner or later. Then it continues to say, our so-called willpower, practically non-existence, meaning that I don't have any now, it's gone. And this is what happened to me. I experienced this in that moment. We are unable at certain times to bring into consciousness with sufficient force the memory of suffering and humiliation. So at that moment, I couldn't remember all the things that had happened in my life, the people that I had hurt, the family that I don't see anymore, the family that I have now that they don't really know who I am. I could no longer mask anything in my life. And I didn't want to deal with it, so I drank. But there is a solution. The solution that I found here, I'm not going to take you through that whole relapse because I don't have enough time, and I really want to talk more about recovery than that whole relapse. But I can tell you this, alcoholism is alive and well every single day of my life. Every single day I wake up and I look at my life and I say, here we go again. It's like Groundhog Day, man. It doesn't go away. It's right here on my shoulder every single day going, you know what? Hey, what are you going to do today? I don't know. I got a lot of time off. Well, what do you think you want to do? God, I'd sure like to move to Venice. Where'd that come from? I think I'll go to a meeting. And I'm on my way to a meeting. I'll stop at the 7-Eleven and I'll just get a cup of coffee. And I'm in 7-Eleven and I notice they got those Coronas and the long neck and the brown bottles now. And I'm like, whoop. I'm on my way to a meeting. Come on. So I know I'm alcoholic. I don't have to prove anymore in my life that I have a memory that can't remember of what it was like. I have to continue to come here. I don't have a choice. I used to have choices, but I used all my back pocket plans. I did. And the solution today is that I'm surrendering on a daily basis. That's part of it. Step one, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. My life is unmanageable. What does that mean to me? I remember when I went to my sponsor and he had me do the first step, he said, I want you to write out what it means to you when you're drinking and what it means to you when you're not drinking. And I could write a friggin' novel on what it was like when I was drinking, but what about when it was when I stopped? It made me think. I'm like, oh, what does that mean? Is this a trick question? You know? And once I got through that part of the process, I was able to look at myself on paper and see how manageable my life was without drinking. So it usually starts out, I come to a meeting and I look around the room and I'm like, these guys again. And I don't show it. This is all going on in my head. I don't like walk in, oh, these guys again. I'll just sit over. No, I walk in, these guys again. Oh, no, be quiet, Glenn. Oh, man, I got to hear this again. If that guy shares one more time about you, I'm going to fucking shoot myself. But you know what? I quickly do an analysis of why I'm feeling the way that I'm doing. Why is it that I feel this way? What's going on with Glenn that day that I can't get right and you're okay? Because when I'm okay, you're okay. When I'm doing great and I got that spiritual bounce in my step and I pray to God in the morning and I made a conscious contact, you know, and I feel pretty good about it, and I leave, and I'm on my way here, and I get here, and all of a sudden, I'm not okay? What the hell just happened? My thinking got me here. My very best thinking has gotten me here, and it also has taken me out of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I always know more. When I was in the car industry, we characterize and assassinate it through characterization over and over and over. You were not safe. When you walked on the lot, we're going to find something wrong with you, make fun of it. Because that's how we did it. That's how we fueled our energy. There's somebody in here that knows that. He worked with me for a while, but I'm not going to point it out. It's anonymity. But I'm glad he's here. You know? But I guess what I'm getting at is if you have a hustler's attitude in Alcoholics Anonymous, take a checkup from the neck up for yourself, please. If you think you can gain one up on somebody, look at that. If you're judging all the time, we judge, we do. We do. I do. Well, I'm not perfect. I judge. But it doesn't last too long. I don't take it into all day and then make it a whole negative thing. And you know, I don't practice the first tradition at all, because when I'm judging, I'm not practicing that first tradition. Our common welfare should come first. Personal anonymity depends upon AA unity. I'm not. I'm messing that one up quickly. And you know who I'm messing it up on? It's not so much as you, it's me, because I'm telling myself in my head that this place is a joke. I don't want what you have anymore. I'm sick of it. You know what? I know that I don't have to drink again, but there's got to be a better way, because this is the deal. When I got here, I thought my life was over. My last drunk in, my sobriety date's 10/1/2015. Coming up on 3 years soon, by the grace of God. When I went in, I had gone through some medical issues in my life. I had two rounds of bouts of cancer. And I share that openly sometimes in meeting. And, you know, at first it was devastating news, you know, but I learned how to deal with it, you know. And I'm living proof that, you know, it didn't take me out. You know, I was able to walk through it with a degree of attitude and get closer to my God and be the very best Glenn that I can be. And so I had two rounds of cancer, and I couldn't stop drinking. I was working 60 hours a week. I was trying to manage my life. I was making a lot of excuses about not coming home. And when I came home, I immediately flew out the front door and grabbed the bottle and some beer, and wouldn't come back for an hour, hour and a half until I was right, until I had that feeling. Until I had that. And by that time, it was 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. She'd go to the room, and it, you know, and I'd stay up drinking until 11 or 12. And it carried on that way for a couple of years. And at the end of it all, I was so broken inside. I was miserable. I didn't even know who I was. I was unhappy in my marriage. I was unhappy with Glenn. I went to the doctor, and, you know, he says, you know, everything looks good. And your cancer seems to be in remission. You're doing well. But there's something that concerns me right now. And I'm like, well, what's that? You know? It was your liver. Really? You don't think you're going to drink that much and not have a liver problem? You're going to have a liver problem. And I mean, during that time, I'm spitting up brown vial in the morning. It's ugly. I got to drink in the morning or I have the shakes. Now the manifestation has kicked in. Now I'm using alcohol like crack cocaine, because I don't want to feel. You know. And you got to drink a lot of alcohol. A lot. To get there. To equalize like where it used to feel like with that other stuff. And so he tells me, he says, well, your liver's concerning because your enzymes are just way out of control. Your normal enzymes in the liver should be 32, 33, 34. 38 would be considered a little high. I'm like, well, how high are they? And he goes, well, they're in the 500s.
Oh,
no. Exactly. I'm like, 500? Woo! 500? He goes, yeah. And even having issues with, and the reason why I bring up the cancer is even being, again, page 24, I'm forgetting. I forget what it's like. I forget my medical history. I forget all of it. And there I am, hearing him tell me that my liver is like a sponge. It is so wet that he can actually take his hands and squeeze it, and the alcohol would just ooze out over and over and over and over. And he's like, I can't believe you don't have cirrhosis. I'm like, me either. Me either, you know? And so what happened was, he asked me, he goes, do you have a drinking problem? You think? I said, yes, I do. He said, do you want to do anything about it? I was broken enough to say yes. I was broken enough to say yes. And I did. And he goes, well, we have a clinical psychologist here that you can talk to. It won't cost you anything. Would you like to see her? I said, make the appointment. And that was the best thing that ever happened to me. And when I started going to her, and we were talking, and she was talking to me, and it took a few weeks. Like I just didn't have this revelation and let go. Absolutely, I still continued to drink a little bit. And when I went to her, we were talking, and she said to me, you know, tell me your story. And I told her, and you know, it went back and forth for 1 week, then 2 week, then 3 week, then 4 week, and then I asked her in one session. I said, Let me ask you a question. Because I'm so smart, I just want to know. And she's like, sure, what would you like to know? I said, well, what do you think of me? What do you think of me? Give me an honest assessment. I really want to know, because I'm not coming to meetings yet. I don't really want to come back here. It's like the last place I'm thinking, because I know if I come back here, guess what's going to happen? My whole life is going to change. It's going to get better, and God forbid that I get better, right? I'm so full of self-pity, I just want to stay where I am, stir the pot. That's me. That's what I do. And she said, well, are you sure? I said, yeah. She goes, can you handle it? I said, I can handle it. She goes, okay. She goes, you got a mind of a teenager. Oh, man. I'm 54 years old, and she's telling me I got a mind of a teenager. I'm like, okay, you can stop right there. We're good. I've heard enough. She goes, well, she says, I can't believe you're still alive. After everything that you've been through, you're a survivor, and all you know is of being survived, and you have zero coping skills. That shit hurt. But it needed somebody to tell me that. And when she told me that, I was like, okay, we're done. I'm good. Went home that night, went to a meeting at Lion's Den on Tuesday night. It was just before October 1st. I left that meeting. I went and got a 12-pack of beer. I did all 11 of them. I saved one for the next morning because I knew I'd have a hurt on me. But when I woke up in the morning, I drank that last beer and I said, I'm done. And that was my last time I picked up and used anything from the neck up. I must have meant it. You know? And I was broken inside. And, you know, week one, week two, week three, coming here, doing whatever you told me to do, I got busy. I no longer have my big toe in the water. I was in. I'm in, you know. And I wasn't going to racehorse through these steps, you know. I was willing to take my time and take some direction and listen to what the guy in front of me was telling me to do at that time. You know, he was telling me all kinds of great stuff that I needed to hear. Like, go to a meeting and be a service. What a concept. Get out of yourself. Wow. And I did. I came in here and I washed coffee cups. And then the next thing I know, I'm secretarying a Friday night meeting. And then after that, I'm doing other things in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I haven't stopped because I'm afraid to stop. Because I know what happens to guys like me when we stop. We pick up. And if we don't pick up, we go insane. We get crazy. People start to look funny again. Lines start to get too long. I get impatient. Through the process of coming back and getting real and getting honest, I found a God of my own understanding. I found a higher power in my life that I choose to call God, and I make no bets of that, you know? He has saved my life more than once, and now I can clearly see after doing the work and staying here for a while, and when things happen in my life, I look at them like I'm not a victim. Right away, I do. Not going to lie. Right away, I'm a victim. Oh, my God. I can't believe this happened to me. She left me. This happened. That happened. I'm out of money. Oh, my God. How come they're calling me for money again from here? And the creditor, I mean, you know, I can look at it as being a victim where I can say, this is a lesson. What do I need to learn from this? Where in the process? Because I have gone through so much pain in the last 2.5 years that I stand before you a free man today. I'm free from that stuff. And I'm free because I've done the work. I'm free from most of it. I still like to hold on to some character defects, like self-pity and dishonest and self-seeking motives. The book tells me that I have to treat that every single day. Every single day. You know? And the part about Alcoholics Anonymous that's starting to make sense to me, really, is all of it. It's not just the service. It's not believing in God. It's not working the 12 steps. And now I'm starting to work the 12 traditions. Because I want to learn something in my life. Something that I never learned before. I want to learn how to be a giver, not a taker. I want to learn how to pause when agitated. That still gets me. That still gets me. You know? But I'm learning through the process of recovery that I have a chance today. I have hope. I have a willingness to stay clean and sober no matter what. Even when I want to drink, I don't drink. And when I want to drink, I come in and fess up about it. And then I hear other people say it that have about the same amount of time as I do, and I go, oh, good, thank God, I'm not doing something wrong here, you know? And we just don't pick up one day at a time, no matter what, you know? And through the process of recovery, I've been able to uncover a little bit about what's going on with Glenn. I've been able to see the differences in my life and the choices that I've made in recovery that hurt, that I don't have to continue to make anymore. That I can make little changes in my life and move one step ahead every single time. Just a little bit. How do you eat the whole elephant? Right? One bite at a time. And I'm going to fall. I'm going to fail on some days. The best thing that I can do that day is not to take a drink. That is the only thing. And I will be irritable and restless. I am not fooling myself here. Don't think that, you know, I can talk all this stuff and not be human. I am human, but I've been here long enough to see that if I don't do the work, it will take me out every single time. And if you've been sober here a while and you're struggling, I just encourage you, find the hope. Keep finding the willingness. Keep finding something that inspires you. I listened to a lot of speaker tapes today. One, I have a lot of time on my hands and I don't like being in here too long. You know, the other is that I get a lot out of them. I got to go down to Paramount City over this last weekend recently. And I got to take a ride with my brother Joseph and a couple of other friends in the program. And not only was the experience powerful, just to go down and see your favorite speaker, to see what he looks like and meet him and listen to him and be in a big book study for the weekend. We stayed all of Saturday, so we got through step four. And to hear him and the inspiration that I felt was uncountable. And I got to tell you, the conditions weren't great. It was 89 degrees outside. The humidity was probably just as high, and there was no AC in that room. And it was slightly bigger than this. And there was 150 people in that room. But my experience was uncounting. It was the best experience that I've had in Alcoholics Anonymous. And it was the ride down and the talking and the realization of everybody being alcoholic and talking about the things that we've worked through in our lives. That was the glue going down. And on the way back, we had a lot of fun. Turned on the radio, sang some songs, let loose a little bit. I don't do that. But I did it. Like, that's crazy. I'm an isolator. I run. I hide. You know? There's so much more that I could talk about, but I just don't have enough time. But I'm going to end with this. I heard this on a speaker tape, and it was the most powerful thing. And it keeps still to this day, keeps me thinking. He says, so God, sometimes he shows up in our life as a superhero, right? This great big abundance God. He just does all this stuff. You're just like, whoa, what a blessing. Wow, this is so great. Whoa, he took that out of my life. Whoa, he put this into my life. Whoa, this is amazing. I can't believe. And sometimes he shows up as a mustard seed. Just a little hope. And then I got to thinking after that, well, what if the mustard seed is a superhero? What if during those times when it's so hard on me that I want to give up and I turn to God and I get as close as I can to him and I find a reason to stay? What if that's it? What if that's the time in my life I'm supposed to know what the hell I'm doing? If you stick around, you get your feelings back. Bad news, right? As long as I know the difference between my feelings and my actions, I'm going to be okay. And I pray to God every single day, and I thank him that I'm clean and sober today, no matter what, and that I can help somebody today. I encourage you, get involved in Alcoholics Anonymous. Do something with your life here. My life is so amazing today. I have no drama. Zero drama. My divorce was final a year ago almost. I'm learning to see who I am finally as a person. I have a relationship with my ex-wife that's good. We co-parent very well together. I have a relationship with my sister that's here tonight, my brother-in-law, that I've never had before, and I love you both. And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I want to thank you for inviting me up here to share my experience. Thank you.
All right, let's give both Aaron and Glenn another hand.